Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, and thank you for listening to the Raptors Over Everything podcast. My name is Emmett Mann. Thank you for joining me. Please do rate, review, subscribe, like, thumbs up, all those things that you do on multiple social platforms and on podcast feeds. Today, joining me is Sam Vicini of The Athletic, an NBA writer, podcaster. Man, thank you so much for joining me. We're going to talk Scottie Barnes today. Isn't that fun?
Well, Ahmed, I appreciate you having me on. I love Scottie Barnes. I'm really happy to talk about him, but God, having me on camera, look, we've been in lockdown here in Melbourne for like 200 days, right? Yeah. And I just got here like a year ago, like almost literally a year ago. So I've been living through lockdown, and seeing myself on camera right now is concerning in terms of the amount of just paleness on my skin. Like my skin is typically not this pale to where you can see the red color. It's because we haven't been able to go outside that often.
You can't even go like outside at all? Like, or is it, we have lockdowns, obviously, like over here in Canada, we've been on lockdown for a long time. We're kind of out of that phase now, but at the very least you can kind of like, you know, go outside, right? Go for a walk or something.
Yeah, we can get like hour, basically. Oh, we can get like an hour outside per day to walk around. That finally just ended on Friday, which is great. Yeah. We're excited about that. But nonetheless, it's going to take some time for me to build back up in terms of not looking like Casper the Friendly Ghost on a podcast platform.
That does kind of sound like, you know, playtime for people in jail, right? They get their hour outside. Admittedly, it does kind of sound a little bit like that's what you guys are going through right now.
I'm not diving into comparing lockdown over a deadly virus to jail. I think that, Canadians, I think, have a pretty smart mindset on COVID in general. So I think that, it's not jail. It's a smart decision to limit the flow of the virus.
So yes. No question. And just so you know, we do have our share of anti-vaxxers around here. There's protests happening just like there probably are in Australia and across the world. So we're not innocent by any means, but Scottie Barnes. Scottie Barnes. Okay. So the reason why I brought you on is because you sent a tweet a few days ago and people kind of ran with it in some ways. And as we were talking about before we started recording, is that Raptor fans are very sensitive. And I think, I mean, if you didn't know that beforehand, you know now. And so I wanted to give you an opportunity to kind of clear the air on your feelings on Scottie Barnes. You did sort of in a tweet, but obviously people just don't forget, and people screenshot things and they're going to share them. Like, I know how this works. I know the people who are doing this, they're hilarious, but for you, because I do believe you're well-intentioned in your assessment of Scottie Barnes. And I do think you think he's going to be a great prospect. So first off, your thoughts on Scottie and how he started off so far with the Raptors.
Yeah, no, I think that I don't think it's just Raptors fans that are sensitive. I think that Raptors fans that look, you had me on because of a tweet that I sent, and I muted it at the end of the day, mostly just because the likes and the, not because of what people were saying to me. I think that like in the first 24 hours, I didn't mute it for like 24 hours, but in the first 24 hours, I got like 25 people that like said something to me in a negative way, right? And I think that the tweet has like 1,000 likes or something. So look, it's like a small amount and people are fans. Like, it's cool. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I'm happy to, I put my opinion out there publicly, and I am someone who's more than comfortable putting my opinion out there publicly, being wrong and being held accountable for it in many ways. I think that comes with the job that I do at the end of the day. And frankly, I think the only way that I'm going to get better at this stuff is by, you know, being held to account and holding myself accountable, especially on it. So I'm someone that doesn't really have a problem with it. Like, as you guys probably saw, like, I just tend to have fun with people when they do it.
And you have to.
It's cool, yeah. Right? In terms of what my first thoughts are on Scotty, I think he looks really much more effective than I thought he would be in half-court settings as a driver. Mm-hmm. And he's getting a lot of his points in ways that make sense to me in terms of what his skill set is. Like, I think that something like half of his points so far are in transition or off of offensive rebounds, right? Which are two areas where he should succeed. I mean, this is a kid that, you know, from the time where he was at university school to the time that he was at Mount Verde, the time that he was at Florida State, right? Like, incredible motor, has always played exceptionally hard, has always been the energy guy. And he's getting all of his points by being the energy guy early on in his NBA career. So it doesn't really, I'm glad that he went to Toronto, because I think Toronto understands how to utilize him and understands how to utilize the things that make him as good as he is and as effective yeah. as he is.
It's true. And he kind of touched on that a little bit a little while ago, actually. He said that at Florida State, he was kind of playing the exact same way that he's being asked to play with Toronto. And over the past, like, you know, a few months, like, they've made it pretty clear that their intentions are to, you know, acquire players and bring in players who are, you know, 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", can dribble the ball, can shoot, can pass, can handle. Like, that's what their MO is, and that's what they're looking for. It's an interesting way to go about things. I mean, teams have kind of tiptoed around that in the past, but they've gone, like, really, like, full throttle into this, and it's been an interesting experiment so far. And Scotty Barnes, like we're talking about, he fits it so well. And so on draft day, when they didn't take Jalen Suggs, I mean, a lot of Raptor fans, and I mean, myself too, were just like, oh, okay. Your half-court offense could probably use a jolt. Jalen Suggs, like, you know, leadership, scoring ability, passing. He kind of fit the Raptors in that way, but then they went with Scotty. Were you surprised when they did?
So, interesting question. Yeah. I was not surprised because I'd reported throughout the week that the Raptors definitely were in on Scotty Barnes. Like, I didn't know if they were going to take Jalen Suggs or Scotty Barnes, but I knew that they were genuinely considering Scotty Barnes, right? Like, I knew that that wasn't a joke at the end of the yeah. day. That, like, I know that some Raptors fans had already built up an animosity toward the idea of them taking Scotty Barnes, but it was not a surprise to me, I guess is the way that I would put it. I didn't think it was the right choice at the time. I'm still not sure if it was the right choice or not, to be frank, but I absolutely did not think it was the right choice at the time, because a lot of the idea of what Jalen Suggs can be is actually pretty applicable to what Scotty Barnes can be. Scotty Barnes is just bigger in a lot of ways, right? And I understand why the Raptors wanted to go for the positional size. They're a team that really values that positional size and positional length with ball skills, as you kind of mentioned, Amit. Now, in the case of Jalen Suggs, he is also a very similar player in terms of switchable defensively, great high-level passer, just fits a different role, right? But if you think that Jalen Suggs is a point guard, he does have real positional size for the point guard position at 6'4". Like, he does have pretty real length. I think he has like 6'6.5" wingspan, which, again, when you're dealing with guarding point guards, that's a pretty real thing. And over the course of his career in Orlando, the first three games, he's actually been really good defensively, in the same way that Scotty Barnes has been really good defensively for Toronto so far. So I guess that what I thought was Jalen Suggs has more offensive upside because I buy him as a shot maker more than I bought Scotty Barnes as a shot maker. Yeah. And to me, this Toronto team was one that was desperate for offensive skill and playmaking ability. I still am very interested to see what this situation looks like. Like, I know you want to talk about the Pascal Siakam of it all once Pascal gets back, and we kind of mentioned we wanted to talk about that. I'm very interested to see what this team looks like when Pascal gets back, because I think that while he's a great player, he also presents some overlap in a pretty significant way with Scotty Barnes. Not that that's the worst thing in the world. Like, I think that there's a world where you can play them together, but can you play them together while also playing a true center, which you probably need on the court with those guys right now, defensively, and then also play OG Anunoby and continue to have the requisite ball skills you need. It's a really, really interesting team build right now in Toronto, I think.
Yeah. And I think they were sort of expecting some lumps in this after the first game. I mean, people were so excited, right? There was their first game in Toronto in like 600 days. And there was a lot of energy. I wasn't at the game personally, but you could kind of feel it. And it was a big letdown, right? And Nick said afterwards that he probably felt like they were a little bit nervous, that the energy wasn't quite right. Like they were kind of up and down a little bit. And there was a big lull in that second quarter and first and second quarter. And it kind of cost them quite a bit. But then you go to the Boston game and you kind of saw more of what they were supposed to be. It's that high energy defense first, get out in transition, and your half court offense. We'll see what happens kind of. And they're still sort of at that phase. And and it's going to be Pascal Siakam is going to be a huge part of what they do going forward. And the lineup stuff is very interesting, but just on Scotty.
Well, in the third game too, you bring up the first two games. The third game, what I thought happened was second game of a back-to-back, right? So they just didn't have the energy. And if you looked, like Scotty was really the only guy that had energy in the fourth quarter, it felt like, in that game. And then I think the biggest part though was that Dallas was kind of able to dictate tempo in a bigger way. They slowed the game down. They said, okay, we're going to go back to the old Dallas offense and just let Luka run middle ball screens the whole time, which is what they should be doing every time. But
exactly
six quarters.
You don't need a Dorian Finney-Smith post up. Seriously, you don't need it. Just no. Luka.
But I thought that was a big part of it, was Dallas slowed the game down. And I would imagine that most teams going into games with Toronto this year, that's going to be their goal. They're going to try and really slow things down and say, hey, beat us in the half court. We think that Fred can probably beat us in the half court. We don't know if anyone else can right now.
Yeah. And another part of doing that on Dallas's end is that less risk for turnovers, because you trust Luka, and the Raptors, obviously they feed off turnovers. So if you're not, you know, trusting the Tim Hardaways, the Porzingis's to, you know, play make and to create, then there's going to be less chance of turnovers happening, and the Raptors can get in transition. And it's a big part of what they're trying to do, especially right now, because the half court is kind of struggling a little bit as they're going. And Nick has talked a lot about, you know, he hasn't really touched the half court too much. Like, he was so focused on the defensive principles and also just getting them to understand how they can make things in transition happen. And so I feel like he's been asked that like every single presser. He's like, yep, still getting there, not there yet, but we're approaching it. And then once we're there, you guys are going to know, because you're going to see it. But it is, it's been a bit up and down so far. And I think the biggest part, probably my takeaway from what we've seen, is that kind of their defense is going to be more vital than probably it has been in past years, because they just don't have the playmaking. If they don't have that, then it's going to be a lot of issues. But with that said, though, I think they do have the defensive guys to do that, like the switching that they're looking to do. And I was actually surprised the way they guarded Luka. I think part of Nick, and this is like his mad scientist brain, this is what he does, is that I'm not going to show all these things yet. He wants to still figure out what they're able to do with their one-on-one defense, because I'm surprised they didn't do more zones. I'm surprised they didn't box in ones and throw more things at Luka. Like, they've done this stuff in previous years. He's just not doing it with this group, because he said a couple times that he'll probably be less creative with them because of the size that they have at all positions. He doesn't want to like complicate this. He's like, we have the size everywhere. Is this going to be about guarding the person in front of you, and also help defense, of course?
Yeah. And look, like, these first, you know, 10 games for Toronto, they're going to be about creating an identity and a culture more than anything. Like, they need to figure out what they're good at. They need to figure out what they can excel at, what they're not going to excel at. And then on top of it, like, look, there's going to be experimentation. Like, they were running out like multiple different ball screen coverages that resulted in them putting two on the ball against Luka Doncic, which is just like death in so many ways. Like, he's going to hit the right guy every single time. Mm-hmm. And I don't necessarily take that as a bad thing. I don't take that as saying Nick Nurse did a poor job in that game. I take that as, okay, Nick Nurse wanted to see what can happen when, you know, yeah. he has someone like Scotty Barnes flying up and blitzing the ball along with the guard, or, you know, whoever they had guarding Luka Doncic at the time. In a lot of cases later in the game, it was OG Anunoby, whenever he wasn't dealing with foul trouble. So I think that he's I think that he's experimenting. The fouls were not great against OG yesterday. No, like, we can just say that. But I think he's experimenting is my point of this. And I think that's fine. And I think it's a reasonable way to go about seeing how these first 10 games go. Like, I don't think that if they if they go like 2-8 or something like that, then yeah, like, you know, panic. I think reasonable minds can panic. Right. Mm-hmm. But if they go 4-6 or something like that, look, like, I think that this team is so young, it's just going to take a little bit of time to, you know, figure out what they're good at the end of the day. Like, they might be really bad in half court offense. And we should talk about Scotty's role in that too, because I don't know how good Scotty is in half court offense yet.
Yeah.
But like, I think that they have enough transition play and enough defensive upside to where they can hopefully get through these first, I don't know, what do we want to call it? 20 games where Siakam's probably going to be out. Or
yeah. It's kind of up in the air. We're not really getting a clear indication of when he's going to be back. Some are saying it's going to be early November. Others are going to be like, it's late November. So it's kind of up in the air.
So yeah, no, it's all about experimentation this part of the year, I feel like.
Yeah. And the key to that, like you're talking about, is they just need to be kind of hovering around 500 once Pascal's back. And then obviously things are just going to change quite a bit. I mean, right now he's still experimenting quite a bit with his rotation as well. It seems like he's got kind of a top nine, but then once Pascal's back, and also Yuta Watanabe, he's going to factor into this too. I think they're both going to be jumping into the rotation. And that means a couple other guys are not going to be playing too much. But on Scotty, because I mean, to me, like, so far, one of the biggest surprises that we've seen has been the growth in his jumper. And I'm talking really from like the day that we saw him in Summer League to now. It's a night and day difference to me. And Nick has he very proudly talked about night school, which has been shooting school for a few players. And it seems like Scotty has been taking advantage of that.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because to me, when we talk about Scotty Barnes' jumper, we have to separate the process from the results in a lot of ways. Anyone that saw Scotty Barnes shoot in high school and then saw it, I want to say honestly, like, not really change a ton by the time he got to Florida State. It got a little bit better, but it wasn't much better. Yeah. From where he was then to where he is now, just in terms of the structural and mechanical changes that have occurred within the jump shot, it really is night and day. He is a player that has not completely, there is still like a touch of a pause there, but for the large portion of it, he's gotten rid of a pretty significant hitch in the jumper, basically over the course of 6 months, I would say. He has really improved his base. He used to have this really goofy wide base on his jumper that, if you watch Scotty play in general, he plays very upright, right? Like, there isn't a lot of bend or flexibility there, which is kind of strange for someone who is as athletic as he is, right? Sure. He plays weirdly upright. Like, there just isn't a lot of bend there. And I think that what we saw was there was not a lot of bend throughout his knees in his jumper. And there was not a lot of, there was just like a strange amount of like stiffness throughout the jumper.
No flow.
Very robotic and mechanical. And it still is a bit stiff to me, but he's really improved the base and he's really improved the hitch. And those are the two things that I was most worried about. Now, like, we need to talk about results here too. Since he's been with the Raptors, so you count Summer League, preseason, regular season to this point. So three games in the regular season, et cetera. Outside of 10 feet, Scotty Barnes has made 19 of 57 jumpers. So, and that's outside of 10 feet.
Yeah.
That's 33%. He's made 5 of 15 outside of 10 feet in the regular season so far. So while we're excited about the fact that he's made 5 jumpers throughout his first 3 games in the NBA, and I think there is like legitimate reason for excitement there, I also do think that, like, we shouldn't be surprised if we look up at the end of the year and he's shooting 33% on shots outside of 10 feet. Yeah. I don't think that's going to be like the worst thing in the world necessarily, because his game is translated in another way that I'll talk about momentarily that is arguably just as important as the jumper. But it could be a situation where the jumper numbers just don't look great and people look at it and go, oh, he still can't shoot. He might not be able to shoot like exceptionally well. Like, I don't think he's comfortable from the 3-point line at all yet. Yeah. But the steps being made here, I think, are the most important things. The progress is the most important thing. And I think that that's where there's a lot of reason for upside if you're Toronto, and there's a lot of reason for excitement if you're a Toronto fan.
Sure. And like you had mentioned, most of his baskets so far, most of his attempts have been layups and dunks. Like, it's almost 50% of them have been just that. So, and that's kind of you talking about too, is the versatility of Scotty, right? And because of his size and it's just how physically imposing he is, like, it's kind of rare for a rookie to come in and have that kind of body. Like, it's sort of like the Zions, the LeBron Jameses, when they're already coming in, like, they're NBA ready. No muscle needed to be added. Like, they are good to go. And that alone is going to make Scotty kind of a threat from the get-go. And that's sort of what happened, is his leaping ability, his strength, and just the overall size of the Raptors, like, across the board. We're going to get into this in a second with the starting lineup, is that he's going to have a lot of mismatches because, I mean, I think he's going to have a lot of mismatches just because of OG and Pascal. Like, their best players, their best defenders, their most lengthy guys, their most athletic guys to guard them. And it's going to leave Scotty. And there's only a select amount of teams in the NBA that have players to guard all three of them. And Scotty, he's so comfortable, it seems like to me, just kind of doing the dirty work. He's like, you need an offensive rebound? I can do that. You need to work in the high post a little bit? I can do that. You need to run in transition? I will do that. And he's going to pick up easy buckets that way.
Yeah, and I think that that is where I may have been most wrong. I don't think I was wrong about the jumper. The jumper was what it was, no, right? Sure. Like, it was bad jumper, and I still have questions about the jumper results, yeah. Right? It's gotten better, but I think that it's still an open book in terms of where that lands. What I think I got wrong about Scotty is – I was a little bit worried about the way that he was able to score at the basket in terms of self-creating shots going toward the rim.
Yeah.
And the reason for that, now thinking back on it, I didn't realize how effective he would be in the wider spaces that the NBA allows. Now, again, this is a circumstance where playing for Toronto and playing for Nick Nurse is a significant help. Because again, like, I've watched both of the Magic's games so far, and I don't want to curse. This is a Canadian podcast. I'm not allowed to.
You don't curse. Come on now.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Have you watched, if you guys have watched Magic games, watch how terrible that spacing is on that court. Man. Like, you cannot imagine a world where Jalen Suggs has one side of the court emptied out. In a way that, like, Scotty Barnes has had, like, a side of the court emptied out for him to straight line drive toward the rim multiple times. But at Florida State, and this is where this is a thing that I think these bigger ball handlers particularly struggle with in the college game, right? I think that college referees are so fucking excited to call charges, and they are so, like, and the court is so much more condensed because the 3-point line is shorter, and because college coaches don't start their offense at 27 feet, they started at 22 feet often, that these bigger ball handlers, they just, like, physically don't have as much space to operate. Like, it's harder for them to find those little cracks and crevices to be able to extend and finish, right? Like, I actually really like one thing that Scotty has shown so far is his ability to avoid, like, contact with, guys in transition trying to step up and take charges. Yeah. Like, I particularly wrote in the draft guide, like, I think he has a great Euro step. I think he has an incredible ability in transition to avoid contact. And in college, in the half court game, he didn't get to show that at all. Like, that was just not something that he ever, like, he played like a pseudo point for Florida State, and they gave him some opportunities to drive, But because there were like multiple collapsing defenders in the paint every time that he drove, because Florida State was an okay shooting team. They weren't like a great shooting team last year. Mm-hmm. And look, if you're guarding Florida State, your goal is not necessarily to stop them from shooting a three with a guy who's going to make 35% of his threes. It's sure. going to be to stop Scotty Barnes from getting to the rim. Right. So I think that where I misevaluated him is a fallacy that I have noted in the past as something that bigger ball handlers struggle with and then mm-hmm. didn't apply to him in many ways. Like, I just didn't love the way that he attacked toward the basket. I didn't think he got the most out of his athleticism going toward the rim. Yeah. In the college game. And realistically, I think that that was more about the college game than it was about Scotty Barnes, mm-hmm. right? Like, I think that Scotty just had the paint crowded so often. You see him in terms of how athletic he is now in open spaces. I mean, he just covers ground so quickly that he's going to be fine whenever he has any sort of like transition, semi-transition look. And that's why he's definitely a good scorer. Like, I called him a no-level scorer in the half court in the draft guide. Like, I kind of think he's at least a one level scorer at the rim. Like, I feel good about sure. that right now.
Do you think what you're talking about with how things kind of transpired with Florida State and that, you know, the lack of spacing, him not being able to kind of spread his wings a little bit, do you think that factored into this question, which was, why wasn't he kind of part of that top four that was suggested, which was like, the top four, which was Suggs and Mobley, and Cunningham and Jalen Green, it's like those guys and then the rest. And then you don't really know what you're going to get from everyone else. Why wasn't he in that group? Because, I mean, I remember like at the beginning of the season, you know, those teams do, or you see sport media companies will do like those graphics, like who's going to be rookie of the year. And it was those four guys. Yeah. But now I'm seeing Scotty in those. That's how much has kind of changed over time. And I'm curious, like, especially with the way the NBA is kind of trending, right? A person like Scotty seems like someone that not just the Raptors would want, but any team would want. Why wouldn't you want a 6'9 guy who can dribble and pass and, you know, his shot is what it is, but like there's so much physical tools there already that are going to translate so well. So why wouldn't you put him in that core?
So I think a big problem that Scotty faced in that regard was simply unselfishness on his part. Like, he is such an unselfish player and all about winning, almost mm-hmm. like to a fault, not necessarily to a fault, because it clearly like built great character within him. And I think he's going to be an exceptional NBA player because of it. Like, in terms of what his profile was before college, even he always took kind of a back seat. Like, you go back to his junior year in high school, he played next to Vernon Carey at university school. And Vernon Carey was like the go-to guy on offense. It sounds ridiculous now, but like Vernon Carey was a top five recruit in the country. And everything went through him on the interior in that situation, right?
Yeah.
So Scotty took a back seat there. His senior year, he transferred to Montverde, where he played with Cade Cunningham, Moses Moody, and Dayron Sharp. It was literally like the best high school team I think I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. So again, he was kind of the dirty work guy that took a back seat and didn't really get a chance to showcase who he was offensively. At Florida State, again, Florida State is just a situation where there is no primary guy offensively. That's not how Leonard Hamilton runs things. He, sure. you know, Scotty Barnes averaged 10 points a game or whatever. He was among the leading scorers, but he was not the primary guy. Like, he'd occasionally bring the ball up the court. They would occasionally run him in like a pick and roll. But for the most part, like, it was spread out well within that scheme. So mm-hmm. over the last 4 years, like, this is a stat that I tweeted out, like, after he had 17 shots in his first game, or second game, I'm sorry. He had 13 shots in his first game. Like, the most shots he took in a game at Florida State in college with all of these physical tools that he has, he took 13. It was the most shots he took in a single game at Florida State.
Huh.
Yeah. Like, he took 13 in his opener in the NBA. He took 17 in his second game in the NBA. So this is genuinely the most primary role that Scotty Barnes has played on a team in at least 3 years. And you can honestly go back to his junior year where he's next to Vernon Carey and you can say 4 years. So it's, I say all of that and I give that context to say that Scotty Barnes is someone that to me didn't necessarily profile as a primary ball handler and as someone who can be the primary engine of an offense. Mm-hmm. The guys that were taken ahead of him are, in my opinion, guys that could be the primary engine of an offense at some point if things go right. Yeah. Cade Cunningham, to me, is just going to be like the engine of a great offense for a long time. Jalen Suggs, I was higher on Jalen Suggs than just about everyone. I still think I probably am. I think he has a chance to be like not only an engine of an offense as a point guard, but also like an all-NBA level defender in a similar way to Scotty, right? Just in the backcourt as opposed to Scotty being in the front court. Jalen Green is a guy that, you know, certainly can get buckets. I was a little bit lower on Jalen Green. Honestly, if I have a regret, it's not ranking Scotty ahead of Jalen Green, which mm-hmm. is probably the one that I'm like most looking back on. And, you know, I knew I had these concerns about Jalen Green and like, I still maintain them to some level just in terms of what his overall impact on the game is going to be. But Jalen Green has a chance to average 25 points a game still in the NBA once his jumper gets worked out and once he, you know, just figures out where help defenders are coming from at that level, because it's probably going to be very similar to like Anthony Edwards' rookie year, where Edwards was not very effective in the first half of the year and then he exploded in the second half of the year because he figured out essentially where everyone was coming from and how he can be an effective scorer. And then the final guy is Evan Mobley. And I kind of thought that Evan Mobley had a better chance to be a primary scorer than Scotty Barnes is. And frankly, Evan is the only rookie I've seen so far. Like, look, we can like, you know, parse between like Chris Duarte, who's 24 years old, right? About like who the best rookie has been so far. But, you know, it's between Evan Mobley and Scotty Barnes in terms of effectiveness so far. And I would lean Evan. Like, I think Evan's been phenomenal for Cleveland. But again, like another guy that can be a big ball handling hub for an offense. So to me, that was why he wasn't within that top four. It was purely because I didn't really see him as a primary ball handler and like a primary source of offense in a way that Cunningham, the two Jalens, and Evan Mobley had a chance to be.
That does kind of correlate with some of the things that we've seen so far this season. Just so people know, so far this season, Scotty's averaging 18 points, 10 rebounds, 2 assists, usage around 22%, and his offensive rating, when he is on the court, the Raptors are plus 11.2. So obviously a huge impact there. And he had a quote a couple of days ago, and people were asking like a lot about his jumper. And he said that he's comfortable, kind of said he's comfortable using it, but he's also okay with kind of recognizing situations. And there could be cases where he's like, you know what, we've had like three straight jumpers, possession after possession after possession. He's like, maybe this isn't a time for me to shoot a jumper. And it's like stuff like that, that kind of shows, it kind of goes with what you're saying, is that he's so aware of his surroundings. He's such a game manager already at this age. And that's kind of rare that he's willing to, I mean, put winning, put his teammates, put everything first, because he just wants to win so badly. And if anyone knows Masai Ujiri, he should probably have like a tattoo win on something on his body, because all he wants to do is win. And he found a guy like Scotty, who's just like, you tell me how I can help us. And because all I want to do is win, and I will do that. And he's got the abilities to do it. It's kind of a match made in heaven, those two, actually, now that I think about it.
Yeah, no, it really is. Like, I thought Scotty Barnes was going to be like a elite level role player, like $100 million player, like top 50 player in the NBA, maybe makes like an all-star game or two, like, you know, right around the borderline, like bottom of it, right? Yeah. Like, maybe probably not an all-NBA player was where I had him, but, you know, definitely a top 50 guy that affects winning at a really high level, and where he went was going to be dependent on the jump shot, right? And I still think that's ultimately where we sit. It's just that everything else has translated at such an exceptional level to this point that we should feel much more confidence in him being, at the very least, a winning player. Like, Scotty Barnes is going to help a team, specifically the Toronto Raptors. He's going to help them win ball games. Like, at the end of the day, point blank. Now, where it goes from here is going to be dependent upon where the jump shot goes, and the results aren't there. The process is there. The mechanics are there. He's an incredible worker. Like anyone you talk to about Scotty Barnes will tell you, like, you know, incredible, incredible worker. So I think there's real reason to believe that his upside is beyond like that top 50 level that I thought, and probably more like, you know, top 25 player in the NBA at some point if things really break right. And top 25 is where you start getting into like consistent all-star territory, not necessarily, you know, maybe he makes an all-star game, you know, maybe that happens at some point. You know, once you get into that top 25 territory, like, that guy makes the all-star game most years, right? Like, I think that that's the upside we're talking about if the jumper continues to come along in the way that it has to this point.
You think to some degree that he's probably, I mean, you kind of mentioned this as well, but what we're getting at is that he's probably a better NBA player than college player because.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah.
Yeah. Because of the spacing around him and also his court awareness, like his processing speed. It really is unreal for someone of his age. And he's already getting those opportunities at the high post where just like a Marc Gasol, guys are cutting around him and he's being asked to make that pass. And that is just not something that all players are able to do and that they're trusted to do, but the Raptors have put so much faith in him. Another thing that's interesting about him is when he's not, you know, shooting jumpers, like the types of shots that he takes, they're all very similar right now. You know, he knows like he has certain post-up moves that he does. He has like his jump hook, right? Everything's kind of the same. And I think that's, again, that's him saying that I know what I can do and I know what I can't do. And I know if I'm doing something that I'm not the best at, I'm hurting my team now. Right. So that's why he's kind of staying in a bit of a shell to a degree. Although, I mean, the Raptors, they want him to keep on expanding and I'm sure he will, but he's comfortable in this position, in this role, doing exactly the things that he knows that are NBA ready, that he can score on. While another player, not saying anyone, but some guys would try things, right? They're saying, let me see if I can pull this off. Let's see if I can make this happen on this possession or that possession.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Like I've had some success with it sometimes. While Scotty's like, that's not a high percentage shot for our team. So I'm not going to do that, even though I could, but I'm not going to do it. And that's another
compare it to the Raptors, right? Like I would imagine that's part of why like Malachi Flynn isn't playing right now. Like Malachi Flynn just like tries shit from time to time. And I love Malachi Flynn. Like I think he should be in their rotation right now based on the end of the year last year that he showed. But like he tries shit from time to time. Like we can just say that it is what it is, right? In the case of Scotty, like I'm really glad you brought up the processing speed because the ability to get out in transition, grab and go, to lead the break, like he was considered a point guard at Florida State. It was mostly in name. Like he would bring the ball up and then hand off to someone to initiate the offense essentially. But that stuff's always been there. Like that was something that like I've written about a lot of times. Like I really love the way that he thinks about the game. I really love the way that he passes and makes plays, especially in the open court. I think in the half court, things are still moving a little bit and the gears are still turning. That's like totally good and normal for a 19-year-old, right?
Sure.
But I think that he has that real ability to make plays on the move, particularly in a way that other guys don't. Like I remember when Jahlil Okafor was coming out, people would like marvel at his passing ability in the post, right? Mm-hmm. At Duke, they'd be like, oh my God, like, look at this guy. Like, he makes these incredible cross corner kickouts. Yeah, everything is like from a standstill though, in his case, when he's the hub and everything is revolving around him as like the sun. And then the rest of the players are the planets. That's not going to necessarily, I mean, people thought that would happen with Jahlil Okafor in the NBA, but it's not necessarily what happened. Mm. Most of the sets that you see NBA teams run now, and this was the case when Okafor was coming up even, you have to be able to pass on the move and make decisions while your body is in motion, because things happen so much faster in the NBA. And that, I think, is a skill that Scottie has always had. Scottie has always had the ability to make decisions on the fly when pressured. It's actually the most important skill. Like, I think that the guy that I most likened him to was Andre Iguodala in a lot of ways. Like, I thought he was like kind of a bigger Iguodala. And again, another guy that like fits everything that I said earlier about, like, you know, made an all-star game, right? Definitely a huge part of winning teams because of his ability to process, because of his defensive ability, because of his ability to play unselfish basketball. To me, like, that's a huge win if he ends up having like an Andre Iguodala like career, given that, you know, I don't know that I would put Andre Iguodala in the Hall of Fame personally, but there will absolutely be discussions about Andre Iguodala going to the Hall of Fame whenever he retires. So I think that that's kind of the ballpark. You know, I know some people have said the idea that he could be like a top, you know, 5 or 10 player. I need to see like way more from the jumper before I get there. But look, I mean, the ceiling to me is definitely top 25 player in the league. And that's about where Andre Iguodala peaked when he was with Denver, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned his name, because I was, when we're doing our previews going into the season, I was actually thinking of OG Anunoby, and Andre Iguodala came up because I compared them, but obviously the physical abilities, but you know, they both have a unique way in which they score. It's not exactly typical, but defensively they're there. The basketball IQ is amazing, and they just have so many ways in which they can impact the game. And I think Iguodala's like best season, I think it was one of his last seasons in Philly, and it was like 19 points. It was like 7 assists or 7 rebounds, 4 assists, something like that. And that was something that I was hoping that we could see from OG Anunoby this year, something in that kind of range, because I think that, I mean, I'm hoping, right? We can, God willing, he had a much better game the other day. He was actually able to put the ball in the hoop and he didn't shoot 3 of 14 or something like that. But it's interesting that you say that name, because again, it's very similar to Scottie again. And this is again, the Raptors kind of building their model, is that they want a bunch of physically imposing players, right, who can do all these different skills. And Iguodala, Hall of Fame, who knows, but he definitely has a name in the NBA when it comes to you look at the history of the game. His name does stick out as someone who is very unique.
Yeah, it resonates. I mean, he won a finals MVP, right? He was an all-star, I think once, maybe twice, if I remember correctly. That's like, if Scottie Barnes ends up being that, it's funny, like you bring up OG with comparing him to Scottie, like it's almost like, because OG just had nowhere near the processing speed when he first got to the Raptors, right? Like he had nowhere near the ball skills that Scottie Barnes has. It's almost like if you put, you know, 20-year-old Andre Iguodala into OG Anunoby's like frame in some respects, right? Because Scottie has all of those like crazy processing things and can really, really pass and can handle the ball in transition and can make plays, but he's just bigger. Like he's way bigger than what Andre Iguodala is in a way that, you know, OG Anunoby, and like, by the way, like I'm an enormous OG Anunoby fan. I don't know if, I know that some Raptors fans like want him to be like the primary guy while Pascal is out. Like I don't really know that he's that, but another guy that I think he's going to be a top 50 player in the NBA for a long time. Like I think he's so valuable defensively, like very real, had a very, very real case for all defense last year. And I think that if he, you know, ends up playing a full year this year, probably will end up making all defense, to be honest. I think he's that good on that end. And then he's a 38% three-point shooter that you can count on consistently. You started to see like the pick and roll ability last year. It's nascent. Like, he's still really navigating that, but anything that he could bring just like as a second side creator, on that, you know, on the ability to handle the ball and drive and score and, you know, get into the mid range and pull up, right? Like, that'd be enormous, for the Raptors. So, you know, I'm building around Scottie Barnes, OG Anunoby, guys like that. Like, I think it's the best way to build because those guys are the absolute most difficult thing to find in the NBA. I again, just also think that like Jalen Suggs is going to be a like top 15 player in the NBA and brings a lot of the same defensive attributes and pass brings an even higher level passing ability, and he's going to score at some point. So it's Scottie Barnes would have been a great number. He would have been like the number three overall player in the 2020 draft. It's just like there were four guys this year that were fucking phenomenal, right?
Yeah, it was a special draft. Anytime we get to speak about OG Anunoby is always a good thing. So just on on that, I think a lot of people were. He's a special talent, and every single year he's adding a little bit more to his. Into his game. And this offseason, it seems like he really went to work, because preseason, that's why people probably felt like that he was ready to take on that number one role, because it was so impressive what he was doing, his shooting off the dribble, how quickly he was able to get his three-point shot off. And then you just add those things to what he can already do. You're just like, this is a really good player right now. And the first two games didn't go as well. Not ideal to probably face Boston early on when you're, you know, trying to take on this role as a number one person, because Boston's tough, right? But then, you know, switching over to the Mavericks.
Were they in game two?
I hear you. You're right. They did kill them. But I'm just saying, OG, he went through it a little bit in that game. That's all.
Right? I know how much Raptors fans love the slander. Like, let me slander Boston a little bit, because that was like a pitiful performance in game two, right?
Okay,
like,
go. Right? Give you 60 seconds.
Effort-wise, it was terrible. Yeah. Like, they just didn't bring it in their second game. And like, coming off of a double overtime game, like, I get it on some level, but I mean, Jesus Christ, like, what are you doing? The Raptors just like, it was effort to me. That was an effort win more than anything.
That's
all. I just wanted to say, like, Boston, that was pitiful in game two. Like, that was atrocious.
It absolutely was. And that was a great moment. One of my favorite moment, actually. It wasn't any single basket. It was Marcus Smart. There's a photo that was on Getty. It was him just kind of standing there, like, looking really, really sad. That was my favorite moment from that game, because Marcus Smart, as we know, after game seven, he called himself the King of the North. And people definitely brought that up. That game, obviously, I mean, the Celtics, they won that series and everything like that, but
you got to see Scottie Barnes like scream in Fred VanVleet's face. Like, that was the best.
That was terrific. And that's I think it was during that game Gary Trent Jr. said he said to Scottie's like, they can't stop you, you're a problem.
Yeah,
he looked at him, he said that, and that's when Scottie got the confidence to keep on shooting, because it's not his nature to do stuff like that. I don't think he even he wants to be the number one scorer, right? He just wants to win games and do things within his realm, because he's happy impacting the game in like a whole bunch of ways instead of just impacting in one way, which would be the scoring. So a unique talent. And I guess this is kind of a good time actually to pivot to the Raptors starting lineup, because Pascal Siakam is going to be back at some point, and I'm really looking forward to it, because my God, their half-court offense needs it. And I'm hoping that he gets back to being that top 30 player that he once was. I think he will. Personally, I think he's in a good position to do that with this particular roster. It's much better than last year. As Nick said, it's like their depth is 10 times better than it was
in previous
seasons. And also, you know, COVID, there's a whole bunch of reasons why he hasn't been like the guy that he was back before the pandemic started. But when he comes back, like, you got your best player back. And now you have to start making some really tough lineup decisions. It's a good problem, because you have so many good players and you're not really sure who to start. But do you think they could move Scottie to the bench?
So it's a great question. I don't think I would start all of Pascal Siakam, Scotty Barnes, and OG Anunoby along with a center. Like, yeah. I don't think I would do all four of those. And Scotty Barnes, like, profiles exceptionally well to being like a 30-minute bench player right now, who comes in, brings energy, brings toughness, like changes the trajectory of a game when necessary, right? Mm-hmm. Just through his infusion of like athleticism and positivity, right? I think I would start like all three of those guys in the front court and play Pascal as like a pseudo center.
Yeah.
Or like even have like OG like guard centers from time to time. Like honestly, OG is probably a little bit better at guarding centers than Pascal.
He did it last year. He had to, because they didn't have a center last year. So he had to.
But, right. Yeah. So like,
it's really tough, right?
It's hard. It's not easy. Yeah, like I think that's what I would do. I would start all three of them and then Gary Trent and Fred VanVleet. Mm-hmm. Do I think they will do that? Look, you would know better in terms of what the Raptors will actually do than I do. I would bet that they bring Scotty off the bench personally, but like that's not based on anything other than like kind of guessing, just given what, you know, the information is about the Raptors, you know, having previously gone through situations like this.
Yeah. I kind of lean towards the same thing. I think the bench minutes would be good for him as he continue to expand his game and to find different ways to score, be as influential as he can be in the half court, just have more of his the ball in his hands. And the starters, like, it's just not going to be the same. And of course, he's probably going to be finishing a lot of games. And then also, like, what do you do? Like, you have Cam and Precious, and you're not going to play them both at the same time. I think they did that against Dallas. Didn't look great. Not something you want to keep on doing.
Can't do it.
Yeah, and they both should play. And I'm sure, like, there's going to be situations, and Nick has done this too, is that he'll just kind of change it up game by game, right? You got Joel Embiid, okay, well, Cam, get in there. But then if it's another team, maybe it won't be Cam. And that could be a case that he does that. But I think they're going to need Gary Trent's scoring. That's one of the biggest things to me too, is that I find in Pascal, he's going to make a tremendous impact. But why wouldn't you want, you know, Gary out there, right? He's shown that his offensive game has continues to evolve, and he's bringing that defensive intensity that Nick loves, especially on the perimeter. You need that. He wants that aggression, and you got Gary and Fred doing that. That's a pretty good start. And then you have, you know, a great 3-point shooter, a guy who can get his shot off really quick, and that's going to help complement OG and Pascal and in a lot of different ways. And then you just let Scotty be Scotty. Right. He needs a ball in his hands, and he's effective at it. And you can make your second unit that much better. And then, you know, down the stretch of a game, do what you want to do. Right. I'm sure it's going to be Scotty, OG, and Pascal and Fred, and then insert here.
Right. And then the guy you didn't mention there is Chris Boucher. And there are going to be games where Chris Boucher just has it going, right? Yep. That he's going to have to play. Right.
Sure.
You know, you typically know within like 5 or 6 minutes if Chris Boucher is going to play 7 minutes in a game or if he's going to play 22 minutes in a game. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, Chris is going to have games where he's going to be able to play 25 minutes in a night, maybe even 30 minutes in a night occasionally, where he's just really effective against the specific, you know, lineup that the other team is throwing out there. So, you know, Precious, I think, has been really good so far. You know, Ken Birch is a really good guy to have off the bench for specific matchups, as you mentioned, like, you know, having to deal with bigger centers that just don't always exist. But like, if you're facing a Jonas Valanciunas, you're facing a Joel Embiid, like, you need to have someone like that there, right? We'll see what their big rotation looks like. Like, I still think that's the thing that's the position they could upgrade most on, but then also you're not gonna like close with whoever the center is either for as long as you have Pascal Siakam on the roster. So like, I don't know, it's a positive that they're set up this way that when you're building and still trying to figure out who your best players are going to be and as your best players are developing and growing and maturing, but for now, it's like kind of a weird situation where, okay, you want to get these guys this time and you want to get these guys these minutes. that means that a great center probably isn't going to want to go to Toronto right now, to be honest, because they would think that Pascal's probably going to close at the five with Scotty and OG, and then they're going to play Fred definitely, and Gary Trent's probably going to close. Like, they have Precious Achiuwa, who I think can, like, potentially close games as a center because he can actually really move his feet and defend on the perimeter. So it's a tricky spot to navigate for Toronto if they're actually trying to win games. But as long as their goal is just pure development right now, which I think it probably is, like, I think that they care way more about that than they do specifically about winning games. They think big picture more than little picture while still maintaining a desire to win games in the small picture. I think that they're handling it about as well as they could right now.
As we wrap up the pod, and again, Sam, thanks for joining me today. Just, I was curious on, you kind of touched on it too, is this season, right? And what their goal is. They've said that, you know, playoffs are the goal, but we also know that development is a lot more important, and that Nick and Masai and Bobby, they value championships over playoff appearances. That's why Masai said last year, playing for what? Right. That was the comment that went viral. It was hilarious. I was in that presser. And when he said, he's like, playing for what? What playing? Why? Because what value is that? And so I'm curious what you think, what's going to happen with the Raptors this year? Like Scotty Barnes kind of becoming this much of a factor on the roster and probably his continued improvement throughout the season. Pascal's coming back. You could make the case that if they're in a decent spot when Pascal returns, things are only going to get better. And I think they've kind of shown that this model that they're rolling with, it does have some wheels to it, that it can work. And I think they are going to win some games. So how do you think this season is going to go for them?
It's a great question. They were, so obviously I do, look, I gamble, and like I do over-unders.
Oh, bro, me too. Scotty Barnes has made me money the past couple of days. Absolutely.
Oh, it's the best, isn't it? Like, yeah, between them and like the Mavericks under, like just pure bet against Jason Kidd, because like, what are we doing here, Jason Kidd?
Definitely not Luka Doncic. I think, roles, that's for sure.
It took them just long enough to figure that out for me to win money yesterday, so I was pretty happy
there you
about
go
that.
Mazel tov.
In regard to their like success this year, I think they're over under, if I remember correctly, was like 33.5, 34.5, something in that range.
Yeah, I took like the under 37. On, yeah,
what if it was that high, I definitely took the under.
Yeah. Okay.
I definitely took the under, not because I think they're in a bad place. I just didn't know where the offense would come from. And that has kind of borne itself out. And I also took the under because I thought that they were undervaluing the Pascal Siakam injury, just given the uncertainty around when he's actually going to return. I kind of estimated it at 20 games whenever I did like my mental calculation on it. But, you know, who knows? It could be 10 games. It could be 25. We don't really know at this point, kind of like you said. So, look, I think that they are probably right on that borderline of a play-in team. I think that a big part of the problem is that the East is much better this year. The Pacers are way better. Like, I know that they gave up that 20-point lead to the Hornets in the opener, but just their process, what they're doing offensively, I think they're going to be way better. Like, they're shooting threes on over 50% of their possessions when they have the actual personnel to do so. All of what they're doing makes sense to me. You have the Hornets, who I think look really good with LaMelo Ball. I really love what James Borrego's doing. They have Gordon Hayward, who, again, like, if not an all-star this year, definitely within that top 30 players league-wide, I think.
Just like, stay healthy.
Yeah, like, if they stay healthy, and, like, look, Toronto as well. Like, if Toronto stays healthy, then they can easily leapfrog some of these teams as well. We saw in the opener, like, look, I didn't watch the opener. I watched the last two games that Toronto played. But Washington doesn't look too bad. Right? Like, Washington looks like they're ready to make a leap here, and they're doing it without these incredible contributions from Bradley Beal. Like, they're actually kind of doing it with depth right now. So that has to be a little bit of a cause for concern as well. Chicago obviously took an enormous leap this offseason as well. So I just look at the bottom of the East, and it's way better than what it's been in the past. It's so much better than what it's been in the past. I think it's going to be difficult for Toronto to jump into that like top seven, unless Boston is just a total fucking nightmare, which like they might be, given their first couple of games. They might just be really bad.
Sure.
But I don't think that they are. Like, I think they're probably okay. I think the Knicks are pretty good. Like, I think that there are enough teams there that are good enough to exceed Toronto right now. But that's okay, because I think Toronto has their eye on the bigger prize, whereas some of these other teams, like Washington, like, I don't know what the fuck Washington's doing right now trying to win games.
They're trying to keep Bradley Beal. That's what they're doing.
I guess. But like, you know, Charlotte, I think, is building correctly while also trying to win games in, like, a weird way. Like, all these teams are trying to win games, whereas Toronto – they care about winning, but they are a lot more focused on the big picture, it seems like. And that's a better position to be. Like, to me, Toronto is in a much better long-term position than Washington, despite the fact that Washington is just beat them on opening night, and maybe they finish with a better record than them this year. But I think Masai agrees that, like, that doesn't really matter. Yeah.
It's a good point. It's something to keep in mind, because I think Raptor fans, you know, 1 year without playoffs, like, it's been so long. It's been kind of a constant. They've been top four year after year after year. And so, like, all right, so last year didn't go as planned. You take a step back, you take a few steps forward. Let's get back in the playoffs. But it's even like the things that we're talking about with the Mavericks game. Like, Nick didn't, you know, empty the bucket, right? He didn't empty it because that's not the plan. That's not what he's trying to do. They're still tinkering and figuring things out. And it's like decisions like that. And I think we're going to see more and more of it throughout the season. Like you mentioned, Malachi Flynn, he's not playing too much right now. What they got to decide what they want to do with Malachi. And there could be cases where you can make the case where, you know, Delano Banton has been very impressive so far. He kind of fits what they want to do a little bit better. Unless Malachi is coming off the bench and like being Lou Williams, you can make the case that maybe Malachi shouldn't play. But if they want to, you know, continue to groom Malachi, had a pretty tough year last year. It's not a great year, as Anthony Edwards mentioned too. Not a typical year for a rookie last season. No summer league, all these factors. They got to give him a shot. They got to give Malachi a shot to show what he can do. So,
and probably, he was really good late in the year. Like, that's the thing. Like, Malachi was really good late in the year.
Yeah, he won Eastern Conference Rookie of the Month. Like, he was very good. So he does deserve a shot at this, right? And I'm very curious what they do, because there's a few different ways that they can go about it. I do think they value winning, but how much? I don't know. Unless like they want to play it out and they'll decide like on the fly sort of what they want to do, because if you're winning games and things are going well and Pascal fits like a glove and you go on like a 10-game winning streak or whatever the case is, all of a sudden you're like, oh, here we are in fifth place. That's pretty good. Look, this team just had a major injury. Oh, so I guess they're not going to be in the top six anymore. Right. Now what do we do? Right? Things like this could happen. And as you said, they're definitely going to be valuing development over everything. But I mean, Nick's still Nick. And I think that he wants to win games and he's going to put the team in positions to win games in most more cases than not. So it's going to be interesting. Closing thoughts for yourself, or should I just let you continue with your day? Get your coffee.
No,
in you.
I'm really glad that you brought up the idea of them continuing to compete while still rebuilding, because I think that it's like, again, like I've watched both the Magic's like first games. Yeah. That team is unwatchable right now. And like Magic fans can go, they're without three of their starters. But like the starters that they're without are Markelle Fultz, who, you know, probably won't be right like the whole year. He'll come back and he'll inject some creativity, but like he's probably gonna be on a minutes limit. He's coming back from an ACL tear. Like, you know, it's not like he's gonna inject everything that this offense needs. They're gonna get back Jonathan Isaac, who, you know, who knows what's going on in Jonathan Isaac's head, first and foremost. But like second, not exactly a crazy infusion of offensive skill in the case of Jonathan Isaac. If anything, he's really gonna help them defensively. And then third, they're going to get back Chuma Okeke, who I really like as a two-way player. And I guess he'll inject some shooting and defensive ability. But again, like he's not going to inject the creativity that this offense needs. So like you watch the Magic and they're really hard to watch right now. Like it's like,
yeah, why are you doing that?
You know that scene? Yeah, you know that scene in A Clockwork Orange where like they hold the guy's eyes open? Like it's that right now, having to watch it as a Magic fan. Yeah. So, and I'm not a Magic fan. I'm just doing it because I want to see all these young guys because I think they have a really interesting group of young guys, but I don't think that they're being utilized in a particularly interesting way. And I think that just given how many young guys they have, it's kind of tough. But I compare them to where Toronto is right now. Toronto's playing really fun games. Like realistically, like I guess Orlando is probably a year behind Toronto, but you look at like the contract control that Toronto has versus what Orlando has, right? Like Jonathan Isaac just started his rookie extension, right? Pascal Siakam, I believe, is on the second or third year of his rookie extension. Which one?
I think it's one. I think it's his third. Right? I think it's his third year now. Or sorry, no, second year. Yeah, second year.
So they have 3 years left of Pascal Siakam. Orlando's 4 years left of Jonathan Isaac, and Pascal Siakam's much better, right? OG Anunoby just started his rookie extension.
What a steal.
You know, you still have Scottie Barnes. Yeah, I know, right? It's an incredible contract. Like, the fact that OG took that is bananas to me. Like, I think he would have gotten maxed. I don't know about max, but he would have got 100 in the offseason pretty easily, I think.
Yeah.
You look at, you have Scottie Barnes on a rookie deal. You have Fred VanVleet, who is on, if I remember correctly, the third year of his contract. You have Gary Trent, who's on the first year of his extension. Look, they're a little bit ahead of where Orlando is, but like they're still rebuilding in like a pretty real way. Whereas Orlando is rebuilding studs up in like having to figure out what's going on with the entirety of their team. Building from a baseline to me is much better if you can actually do it than what Orlando is doing. So I think I would much rather be, look, this isn't like breaking news, right? But I'd much rather be in Toronto's position than even a team like Orlando's position, where Orlando is going to be one of the three worst teams in the league this year. They're going to play unwatchable basketball. And like, they're going to have these stars, these young players who I really like. Jalen Suggs. Again, like I think that he would be my favorite young player on Toronto, if we're being honest.
Sure.
But I worry about like bringing up Jalen Suggs, like in the Orlando Magic situation where there's no offensive movement and there's playing two centers with him all the time in Wendell Carter and Mohamed Bamba. And, you know, he's stuck next to Cole Anthony, who's just chucking up shots left and right. Versus Scottie Barnes, who's in Toronto and is getting a real opportunity to do what he does best and to succeed in ways that he is capable of succeeding in right now. So,
yeah,
the Raptors are in a really good space, not only to develop players, but also to win games. And I think that they should just take it as those things come, right? Like,
sure.
If wins come, great. If losses come, okay, like not great, but doesn't really matter long term. So I'm a big fan of the way that Toronto builds. Like I think that they could stand to get better, like contract structural value. But like whenever we're talking about such, like it's such a trivial thing, right? Like okay, giving Gary Trent a 3 year deal with a player option, like that's not a good contract. But you know, whatever, what can you do, right?
Yeah. They got OGs.
Like in the big picture, it's just such a small, in the big picture, it's such a small thing, right?
Sure.
Like getting all of the big decisions right is so much more important than, you know, giving Kem Birch like 3 guaranteed years or whatever, and giving Gary Trent a 2+1 deal. Like that stuff doesn't matter. I mean, it matters like on the margins, but when you're at the space that Toronto's at now, doesn't matter all that much. Just make the big decisions, get them right. And look, I think that they certainly didn't get the Scottie Barnes decision wrong. Let's put it that way. Like they might not have gotten it right. Like maybe my hypothesis ends up being correct and Jalen Suggs is better, but it doesn't matter because they didn't get the pick wrong. Like getting the pick wrong would have been taking, you know, someone who is not as effective as Scottie Barnes. Whereas getting the pick right is, yeah, sorry, I have a cat that's squeaking.
That's okay.
On my floor right now.
That's all good. He agrees with your magic takes.
Getting the pick wrong would have been taking a bad player. As long as you got the pick, like, maybe not right, but you hit on the pick, that's all that matters.
It's an ongoing joke with Raptor fans that anytime they play the Magic, it's just like, God, the Magic again, because the games are always boring. The only thing that made it interesting is when Aaron Gordon and Kyle Lowry got into their little feud that made it somewhat watchable. But other than that, it's just like, oh God, the Magic. So my counsel to you is, for your sanity, please stop watching the Magic, or like take like a 2-week hiatus, because it's just not good. Like, you're going to start hating basketball, and that's not good. Invest more time into the Raptors. That's a good way to do it. Thanks.
I bet on the Knicks tonight, so I will watch the Magic game, but I will not watch many after that for the next couple of weeks.
There you go. Well, make some money tonight. I'm hoping I make some money as well tonight. And again, Sam, thank you for joining me. Thank you for listening to the Raptors Over Everything podcast. My name's Ahmed Mann, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.